when you're thinking about watering again, you know, really think back, when was the last time it rained? Like today, if it rained, well, don't water anything tomorrow, unless you've got that potted plant or hanging basket that's underneath a roof. You know, that's different. But anything that was exposed to the rain, let it go for a while. It's going to need to dry out now. Also, and I hope this doesn't confuse people, if you fertilized recently, this rain probably has washed all that fertilizer away. So the next time you water, you know, I usually say fertilize every third watering, but this is different. So you didn't water, but Mother Nature did water. So count that as a watering. So next time, go to water when it does need it, and it may be 3 or 4 days from now. Think about fertilizing also, because that last fertilizer you put in there is washed away.
Okay.
I hope that makes things a little clearer, because I hear it and I see it quite often of some people. I think that they're over caring for their plant. we always call it you're loving them to death, you know, by watering them. You know, when you're watering, you're also feeding, because they're getting nutrients right out of the soil. So you're just overdoing it a lot. So let them dry out once in a while. Matter of fact, that one of my practices that I like to do, that I learned many years ago from a guy I thought that probably knew more than anybody on earth about gardening, that was Malcolm Graham. He loved to let plants wilt once in a while, wilt down, because that helped refresh the soil. And then when he did water, that would help flush out, that water would go in the soil and go down deep. So it would help flush out some of the salts or bad things that may be in the soil. It finally gave it a chance. So I practice that quite often. I know it's hard to do, you know, seeing a plant wilting there. But sometimes it's a must. And sometimes the plants will really enjoy it. But I want to talk about a few other things here, too.
Okay.
It just dawned on me the other day at the greenhouse, a very elderly man. I'm trying to be real nice about this, and I think it's great. A very elderly man came in, and he could hardly move, and he was having a rough time, but an old guy. And he bought 2 cherry trees and 2 apple trees. And it really dawned on me. I said, my gosh, you know, he does know, because he seemed like a knowledgeable gardener. He does know that he's not going to get any fruit for a few years off of these. But then it dawned on me, man, I've seen this before, and I've heard about it through history before. This really does my heart well. Doesn't matter what age you are. You can still plant a plant, even though you know that you may not enjoy the fruits of your labor for years to come yet. So I remembered the story of Theseus and the Minotaur. I've told it many years ago about it. It's in Roman history, if you think way back in your high school times. Theseus was sent off to fight the Minotaur from King Midos. King Midos every year would ask a lot of his countrymen for, I can't remember the number exactly, 6 or 8 young virgins to offer to the Minotaur to make things good. You know, that was their way of taking care of nature. And Theseus's father was asked, you know, you have a young son. We want him to take to offer to the Minotaur. And Theseus's dad, right away, planted trees. And a lot of his the people in town would say, my gosh, I can't remember his father's name, and I should. Why are you planting trees at your age? You know, you'll never live long enough to see them grow. He goes, yeah, I know. I said, I'm planting these trees for my son. He says, but your son is going to fight the Minotaur. No one returns from that. He says, yeah, I know. But these trees will take his place, and they will grow forever, even though he's gone. Well, Theseus got on the black ship, they called it the black ship, that went over to the island of Minos, where the Minotaur was. And he kind of caught the eye of King Minos's daughter. And she kind of gave him a hint on how to survive the maze of the Minotaur. And it all turned out well. So he did return, but his father was a happy man, too, because he had planted those trees just in case. So that, it kind of reminded me of that elderly man buying the two cherry trees and the two apple trees. It's still a good thing. I don't care how old you are. And I hope that someday I'll be in that boat, even though I won't be able to move. Or he had helped the planet. He had helped even get it out of the truck. That I'll be able to do something like that.
Well, and his kids will be able to enjoy it. And
that's right. And it'll bring back memories, you know, that my father, my grandfather, my great-grandfather, or even my great-great-grandfather planted that tree. So it made me think of that. So then I started thinking about other trees. And
Bob thinking about trees? Oh, my gosh.
And maybe a lot of people don't realize it, but we're all pretty closely connected to the trees. I used to see it out at Pitt all the time. On a nice sunny day, a lot of the kids would gather out in a big grassy area outside the library where there was six or eight big pin oaks there. And all of them, even though they were sunbathing, would still all gather around each one of those trees and have a big separation and then gathered around the next tree. They all seemed to just gather there around those trees. And then another story I wanted to tell about trees. My daughter lives in Albuquerque, New Mexico, just outside of town in the farmland. And there's lots of farm workers there. And at the end of her driveway is a lot of cottonwood trees, old cottonwood trees. And one particular one has been damaged maybe by lightning. And so there was a nice hollow area at the base of the trunk. And every day, all these farm workers at the end of the day go to this hollowed out cottonwood tree and have their beer to celebrate they got through another day. And they all, when they're done, they throw their beer can inside this hollow spot. In this, she calls it the beer tree, inside the beer tree. And then when my daughter wakes up in the morning and goes to work, all the beer cans are gone. Every day this happens. Yeah, someone comes and picks up all those empty cans. But what really fascinates me is they always choose that one particular big old cottonwood. And it's a big, big tree.
That's weird.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's neat.
I think it is. So that's a few of my stories about trees.
Hey, Bob, we have a...
Oh, sure.
We have a caller here, which is always a good thing. Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Sure. I have a real specific question, though.
Okay.
I have a Queen Anne's lace infestation in my Pachysandra.
Okay.
Is there anything I can use? Because obviously manually pulling that stuff out doesn't work typically real well long term. Is there anything that will work to get rid of the Queen Anne's lace without killing the Pachysandra?
Okay. First, I would have to recommend the hand pulling.
Okay.
And that I know can be quite a job, but believe me, over the years, by just hand pulling, you can eradicate that. But another way, and this is very risky, and I would only try it in a small area. I've done it before myself. Pachysandra is a really tough plant, and you notice the shiny leaf. It has a really heavy wax coating on all the leaves that protect the leaves. So I have seen this, and I'm probably not supposed to say this, but I'm going to anyhow. I have used a real mild Roundup. You know, if they say it's 2 ounces per gallon, I may only use a half an ounce per gallon of Roundup and spray it right on that Queen Anne's lace. Now, some of it's going to end up on the Pacasandra, but in my experience, it didn't hurt or kill the Pacasandra, but it did get the Queen Anne's lace.
Okay.
Now, that's risky. I don't know if you want to try that or not.
At one point in time before I started pulling this year, you couldn't see the Pacasandra over the Queen's Anne's lace.
Yeah, you got a lot of it.
It's that bad.
So, okay.
The other suggestion I had heard was dig it up, dig up a section, really take the Queen Anne's lace out from pretty much like underneath, like, and then replant the Pacasandra. But the area that I'm talking about is just too big for that.
Yeah, and that's real intensive work there.
Yeah.
So again, I'm going to say that, number one, that Queen Anne's lace, when it first starts to grow, before it flowers and sets seed, this is important. You got to make sure it doesn't flower and set seed, because then you'll be fighting it forever, because those seeds can land in that bed of Pacasandra, and they can stay there for up to 5-6 years and then wait to germinate.
Yeah.
So, number one, make sure it doesn't flower, and when you got the time, just pick an area and start pulling it. And you will catch up sooner or later, because that Pacasandra should grow so thick that it'll shade the soil and those weeds can't germinate and start to grow again. But it's a long process. It's going to take years.
Perfect. I appreciate the help.
I hope that was help for you. There's no silver bullet in a lot of the weeding that goes on. Sometimes it's just patient and you just got to carry on and continue and until you beat it, and you can.
Good morning. Do you have a question for Bob?
Yes, I do. I have a rose bush that I've had for several years, and the first 2 years I had it, it would bloom. It was beautiful, and the roses are like a deep coral, light orangish color.
Uh-huh.
But the third year, it only had one blossom, and it didn't come until like mid-August.
Oh.
The last 2 years, nothing's happened. And I've fed it, and I mean, the foliage is beautiful. It grows and everything. And last year, I even tried the hydrogen peroxide mix.
Yeah.
Sprayed, nothing's happening.
Nothing's happening.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'm going to guess that you're lacking in that fertilizer, the second number on a fertilizer package, you'll see three numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like a common one is a 10, 10, 10.
Yeah.
The first number is nitrogen. That makes everything grow that's green, lots of leaves. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you don't want a whole lot of that at this point. The second number is phosphorus. That's the one that helps produce blossoms.
Okay.
So if I was going to fertilize that rose bush, and I would, since it's not blooming, it's probably lacking in that nutrient,
okay,
the phosphorus.
I have some of that here.
Oh, do you? Good.
But I just have been putting rose fertilizer on it for rose bushes, but I'll just throw some phosphorus on it. And...
Yeah, yeah.
How often should I do this?
I'm starting to stutter here because it's tough. Is it a liquid or a dry material?
It's like a powder.
Powder that you mix with water?
No, it's just like I think you just sprinkle it around.
Oh, okay.
The bush.
So usually those types, the granular powder that you just sprinkle on the ground, are good for 2 to 3 months. Now, if it's in a well-drained area and we get hard rains like we just did last night, that washes most of that away. So that you may have to reapply. So that's why I'm having a rough time saying a lot of us can sprinkle on that dry fertilizer and we're good for 2 to 3 months. Some of us, though, when we sprinkle on that dry fertilizer, the hard rains wash it all away and we have to reapply maybe once a month.
Okay.
Okay.
How much would be too much?
Oh, but you have to read the back of the package, you know. I don't know the strength of it. And they're all a little bit different, and they'll tell you exactly how many ounces per the size of the plant that you're applying it to, or the area.
Often would be too often.
Oh, how often? Oh, I wouldn't go more than once a month.
Okay.
Now, if you were doing the liquid fertilizer, I would do that once a week, maybe even twice a week.
Okay.
But with a dry fertilizer once a month, unless, you know, the rains quit, if it doesn't, if we don't have these big gully washers, then leave it go for a few months.
Okay.
And then come fall. Do you have mulch around the rose bush?
Oh, yeah, I cut it back and mulch it every fall.
Oh, okay, good, good.
I mean, the foliage is beautiful.
Yeah, but just no blossoms.
Right.
You sure no one's eating the flowers off?
No.
No? Okay.
I look at it all the time, and I even last year put like a little fence around it, thinking that, you know, is something getting at it? Is an animal urinating on it or something? But no.
No.
It still didn't do anything.
It's got to be then. It's just lacking in a certain nutrient, and it's probably that phosphorus.
Okay.
That it just can't bloom, or it may have too much nitrogen, and so all it does is put forth green growth rather than flower growth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Let us know how it turns out.
That's a good question, and that happens with a lot of plants that we tend to over, when I say over-fertilize, I mean giving them too much nitrogen, that first number on the package. And that puts a lot of growth on a plant. But when you are giving it too much nitrogen, the plant makes that decision. And I know this is difficult to accept, that plants are really thinking a bit on certain things, but they are. They get fat and happy. There's no reason to flower. If I got all this food, I can just grow. Later on, I'll flower. Well, in Bradford, there is no later on. Later on is winter time. It's too late. So they get tricked that way. You can fool Mother Nature. So sometimes it's a good idea to be very, very careful with the fertilizer. Now, if you're trying to get that flower, though, that phosphorus, that second number, apply that. And that third number, the potash, that one can be very important. That's important for the overall health of the plant. Helps it fight off diseases and insects and helps the roots grow. But that second number is the real flower number.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a break and hear from our friends from Worth W. Smith, but we will be right back to answer your questions.
Get going on your outdoor projects now with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find a big supply of culvert pipe, 6-inch to 36-inch diameters and 20-foot lengths, perfect for drains, driveways, and other drainage uses. Worth Smith in Bradford also has plenty of railroad ties and patio blocks, as well as plastic and steel barrels for dozens of uses. And if your outdoor activities include camping or cooking out, you'll find what you need, from charcoal to mountain pie makers. If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Hardware in Bradford.
Welcome back to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris. And if you have a question for Bob, give us a call at 368-9372. That's 368-WESB. Or you can go to facebook.com/WESB1075 and leave a question there. Or you can email garden@WESB.com. Bob, take her away.
Since we're talking about fertilizer and plant growth and so on, you know, that's why they do make these certain fertilizers a rose food. They even make a fertilizer for tomatoes specifically, and it goes on and on for a lot of plants. Now, not everybody wants to get that involved with their gardening right away. Maybe someday they will, but it can be helpful. So just an all-purpose, almost mistake-free fertilizer is a real light one, like a 10-10-10, those three numbers. So if you really don't want to get complicated with it, but you do know that the plant does need some fertilizer. Certain plants do. Our trees and shrubs and lawns don't normally need fertilizer unless we're trying to make them grow a little faster, a little stronger, whatever, then we can. But our vegetables and annuals and those rose bushes, those are all heavy, heavy feeders. So nature doesn't supply them with enough fertilizer right here in Bradford because they're not really native to Bradford. So they're not used to our conditions. So we do have to supplement those particular ones. So it's a good idea to get in the habit of doing some fertilizing because you can make your plants a lot happier. But still being very careful because, again, when we have that high nitrogen number, that first number, we spur on a lot of new growth. Now, not only can that cause us to not have many flowers or even no flowers, it also makes a lot of new, fresh, tender growth that can invite a lot of insect pests because a lot of them need that the tip, like an aphid. You always see them right at the very tips of a plant because they have a mouth part that can't penetrate down further where it's been hardened off and there's a thicker waxing coating and a thicker bark. So they're always up there at the tip. Now, if you over-fertilize and you're proud of that plant growing bigger and bigger, you may be inviting those. So, and that's okay too. But keep your eye out for that. And a lot of that's going to happen on the new growth. So concentrate on watching that new growth. And then if those pests do appear, you know, there's a lot of ways you can take care of it. And the first way is always a blast of water is the number one way to take care of that pest problem.
So in the break, you were talking about how the weather can affect which weeds are popping up.
Yeah, yeah. Like we were talking about, there seems to be a lot of Queen Anne's lace around. Well, evidently, it's just been, and you got to go back a whole year. It's been ideal last year. They probably put forth a lot of flower and a lot of seed that way. And then the winter was just the right temperature and just the right enough moisture for those seeds to get what they needed through the winter. So come spring, a lot of them germinated, those seeds, and we must have had just the right kind of spring for them, too, temperature-wise, rain-wise, so on, sunshine-wise, that they all germinated, and we have an overabundance. And this happens every year, you know, when you really start getting into it, you'll see certain plants do real well one year and then not so well the next year. And a lot of that has to do with the environment, with the weather conditions going all the way back a year.
That's just science is so interesting.
Yeah.
that it takes a year for certain things to show up.
It does. Yep. And so that reminds me, and I know I mentioned it before, if I got time.
You do.
Yeah. About the oak tree.
Ah.
You know, that's a tree that just fascinates the bejeepers out of me. And it controls a lot of nature here in Bradford, the oak tree does. And last year it put forth what we call a mass crop, where it has overabundance of acorns. And if anybody's got an oak tree in their yard, they're probably seeing those little tiny oak seedlings popping up everywhere. And then you're cursing the squirrels and the blue jays saying, why didn't you get all them and take them off into the forest? But by doing that, by making that mass crop, all of nature relies on that. So the squirrels and the mice and all those other animals had plenty of food so that they could have an easier winter. And by having an easier winter, they came through winter healthy. So that meant they were going to breed a lot more than they normally do. And so we get an overabundance of all those smaller animals, like the squirrels and the mice and the deer and the bear and all of those animals. And they all affect each other since a lot of that oak, the acorns were there. And that even goes right on down the line to the insects, because a lot of the insects rely on the mammals for their population. So a strong mammal population makes a strong insect population. So just be aware of that. You know, and that doesn't happen every year. Just because you see extra squirrels or extra mice running around this year doesn't mean you will next year. They even have a term for it. Nature's theory of abundance, where where that keeps populations in check. It's letting the squirrels and the rabbits and the mice have a good year now, and now it won't produce a lot of acorns for two more years. That population will start to go down. Well, nature likes to stay in an equilibrium. So it'll then, after a few years and the populations are starting to go down, it'll start to produce that big crop again. So we build it back up again. But keep in mind, with that also comes everything else in the forest. We're going to have more insects in the. I'm warning people about the ticks mostly.
Right, right.
Since there are more rodents in the forest, there are going to be more ticks. So just be aware of that. But it is just part of nature.
And learn how to check yourself and your pets, your kids,
yeah,
for ticks, because it's really important. You don't want Lyme disease. That's an awful thing.
It is, yes.
So, wow, Bob, we covered a lot of stuff today.
We did, yeah. And man, there were some complicated questions today.
But that's a good, you like that.
I though. Like that a lot, yeah.
So if you have questions during the week and you don't think you can hold off till Saturday, you can send them to garden@wesb.com. And you can also send pictures there if you want. You can send us a message at facebook.com/WESB1075. Or you can even give me a call at 368-9372, 368-WESB. And I will pass the message along to Bob for next week, because he likes to answer your questions. And Bob has one more thing to say.
Yeah, so I kind of told some of my stories about trees, so I hope some people may call in or write me a letter or email me about their special experience.
Oh, yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah.
I would love to hear that. Yeah. So do that. So we will see you next week. And yes, we will. Next week is the 4th of July, but we will be here. So we'll see you next week.